Now, we can see birds all year long here in Wisconsin, although late spring is a particularly fun time. That's especially true when so many of us are at home during the day and can actually enjoy the ones who might be coming to our yards and our feeders. Craig Thompson works for DNR's Natural Heritage Conservation Program. Much of his career has focused on migratory bird conservation, and his work was featured in the PBS Wisconsin documentary Our Birds. He lives on Wisconsin's west coast, a little north of La Crosse. Craig, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, Keely. I'm delighted to join you today.
We are here on the last day of April. What birds are we seeing migrate through Wisconsin right now?
Oh, my gosh. There are just all kinds of birds that are coming in every day. This is, as you had mentioned, a really fun time of year. It's incredibly exciting as it relates to migration. So just a little bit of perspective. Migration actually begins in March with the return of birds that are considered to be super hardy. The geese, the cranes, the waterfowl all come back as the marshes start to open up and the rivers and start to de-ice. And then in April, what we see is the first influx of what we consider to be short-distance migrants as it relates to songbirds. So we see bluebirds coming back and hermit thrushes passing through and robins. Those are all smaller birds that aren't quite as hardy as the first wave of migrants, but are still pretty tough because, as you know, weather can take a turn for the worse now and then in April, and they have to be tough enough to be able to endure. But the curtain on migration really lifts in May, and that's when we see an influx of all kinds of spectacular birds. Literally, thousands of birds will pass through our state over the next few weeks, representing hundreds of species. And it's a show that is not to be missed. So right now, we've got charming little white-throated sparrows that are singing every morning as they head north to the northern forests of Wisconsin and Minnesota and southern Canada to breed. I saw my first blue-gray gnatcatcher today. A couple of days ago, we were blessed with our first sighting of a rose-breasted grosbeak at our sunflower seed feeder. And for those who don't know what a grosbeak is, it's a spectacular songbird that looks like it's clad in formal wear with a bright red ascot. It's just got a wonderful song. It actually sounds much like a robin that has taken singing lessons. So it one-ups a robin in the song category.
And Craig, we can actually hear that quick.
If
we pause for just a moment, we can actually hear the rose-breasted grosbeak quick. If you want to take a listen to it, here it is.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so we can hear kind of how, you might say, it might sound similar to other birds that you're familiar with, certainly. And you've seen these now.
And we're seeing those now. Mm-hmm. I'm hearing reports of hummers coming back and Baltimore Orioles coming back. And again, over the next, migration will crescendo right up until mid-May, which is considered the peak. And within the next couple of weeks, there'll be all sorts of things that we haven't seen since last summer that are going to just be a delight to watch again.
Craig Thompson is pointing out some birds that he's seeing and we might be saying, and you're part of this conversation. We're talking about birds and we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What are you seeing in your yard at your feeders right now? Are they the usual suspects or have you noticed something rare or spectacular? Maybe you've got birds that come back every year or you've noticed something new. Give us a call. Let us know. 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. Let's talk about different kinds of feeders and what to put in them. Craig, I have to admit, I don't have any in my yard, but we have been spending more time at home and we've been thinking about it. Where do we even start? Because there are a lot of models and a lot of options.
Well, there are all sorts of feeders that you can put out, and it just depends on what kind of birds you'd like to attract. The traditional feeders are those that offer some kind of seed, particularly for the birds that decide to stay through the winter. So there are a variety of tube feeders that you can fill with peanut chips or with sunflower seeds or with safflower seed that will attract seed-eating birds. In spring, a lot of people like to put out nectar feeders. So they put out sugar water feeders that provide food for hummingbirds as they come in to set up shop. And then some folks also put out feeders for orioles. Orioles are black and orange members of the blackbird family, just a lovely bird, and they respond really well to orange color. So if you put a feeder out that has oranges in it or is an orange-colored feeder that has trays of grape jelly, you're likely to attract orioles during migration. And it's a great way to see an otherwise a bird that's otherwise kind of often very difficult to see because it frequents the treetops. And so that those are all good ways to attract birds during migration. One of the things that we do here at our house, Kelia, is put out two bird baths, and I keep them filled with fresh water every day. During dry times, you know, birds migrate no matter what the weather, but when it gets a little dry or if it gets hot, they're really looking for sources of water. And we have seen spectacular things drop in to take a quick drink and a quick bath as they're headed north to Canada during migration. And so standing water or moving water, if you have that kind of feature, are really good ways to attract migratory birds as well.
Depending on where we are in Wisconsin, should we be focused or trying to attract certain kinds of birds, or can we, you know, kind of think of it more broadly as far as what's going through or, you know, finding a home here in Wisconsin right now?
I think we can think of it more broadly. So just to have the right kinds of feeders out to attract species, the most important thing that people can do long term, and of course this isn't a quick term fix for this migration season, but from a longer term perspective, to plant your yard with native species. So native trees, native shrubs, and native plants are all going to be very attractive to birds. And it's literally a situation where if you plant it, they will come. Birds respond to habitat structure. What I mean by that is if you put trees in, you're going to get tree-loving birds that will eventually show up. If you put shrubs in, birds that are attracted to shrubs will arrive in your yard and so on. So you can plant your yard to make it a bird oasis and have very gratifying results in just a handful of years.
And you talked about making sure that you have fresh water in the bird baths. What about feeders? Should we be cleaning those, or is there anything specific we need to do to take care of those so birds have a safe place to eat?
Yeah, that's a really good point, Keely. So it's feeder hygiene is extremely important. You want to make sure that your feeders are cleaned usually about once a week. And I use a weak bleach solution to take the feeder down and scrub it and then rinse it thoroughly so there isn't any residue on it. And then you can put it back up. I don't recommend a bleach solution for hummingbird feeders per se. I just really use a warm, soapy water to clean those out and make sure. And you have to be on top of these hummingbird feeders because the sugar water, when it gets hot during midsummer, can really go bad very rapidly. So within a matter of 2, 3, 4 days, it can start to grow mildew. So you have to keep those scrubbed out. And I use warm water and soap for that and just make sure that the hummingbird mix is always fresh. By the way, people do not need to use red dye in their hummingbird mix. A simple mixture of four cups of water to one cup of granulated sugar is going to be sufficient. And the feeders have red on them, and so you don't need to put any dye in the food whatsoever.
Thanks for those tips.
But yeah. Keeping those feeders clean is important, as is that clean water and bird baths as well.
Okay, we'll try to stay on top of it for sure. Talking with Craig Thompson of the DNR right now about late spring birding in Wisconsin. And there's a line for you at 800-642-1234. What birds are you seeing in your part of Wisconsin right now? If you're home more than usual, are you getting a chance to see more visitors to your backyard? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You could also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. If you're a lifelong birder, what tips and advice do you have to share with people who might just be getting started? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. There's room for you in this conversation. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. Thanks for being with us here on Central Time. I'm Keely Boltina. We are talking with Craig Thompson of the DNR about late spring birding in Wisconsin, and your experiences are welcome. We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What birds are you seeing in your backyard? Maybe you've taken a social distanced walk and seen something new or something you haven't seen in a really long time. Give us a call. Let us know what that was like at 800-642-1234. And we've got Phyllis from the town of Dunn ready to talk with us now. Hey, Phyllis.
Hi, thank you. Well, my grandmother used to keep hummingbird feeders, and when she came back home to her house after being away They would come up to her and buzz in the face as if to say, well, where is it? Where is that food? But as wonderful as that was, I don't feed hummingbirds sugar water because I wouldn't feed my children sugar water. And I think it must be bad for them to be eating all that candy, so to speak, and not what they're supposed to eat. This is as far away from a native flower as you can get, sugar water.
Interesting, Phyllis. Thanks so much for that. Craig Thompson, is it like feeding hummingbirds candy all the time, all day, every day?
Well, Phyllis raises a good point, but nectar is, in terms of its sugar content, is not that much different than sugar water. So to some degree, sugar water mimics what's available from plants. It gives the birds an added boost. I'm not aware of anything that indicates that sugar water is, in fact, nutritionally bad for hummingbirds. It's interesting to note that when they're actually breeding, they eat a lot of insects, and much of the food that they need to feed their young are insects because of the protein and the fats associated with that. So while the sugar water is more just a carbohydrate for them, it is important, particularly during migration, to give them a boost. I suspect that on a limited basis, there are some hummingbirds that probably make it through extremely cold nights in early Wisconsin because of availability of feeders in their neighborhood. And while we don't think that feeding has an impact on wild bird populations in general, for individual birds, it may actually benefit them. But on balance, I don't think that there are downsides to feeding hummingbirds sugar water. And in fact, if it brings joy and people can help connect birds, and that then leads to additional actions for bird conservation, I think that can be something that's considered extremely beneficial.
Phyllis, thanks so much for giving us a call at 800-642-1234. Now, Kathy from Madison wants to join the conversation. Welcome, Kathy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I have two things. I got so excited about my Oreos coming. I made 2 quarts of sugar water about a month ago, but I put it in the refrigerator. Is that still good, or should I dump it and make some new stuff?
Okay, first question from Kathy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, hey, Kathy, it's a great question. My inclination would be to dump it and make new stuff. Even sugar water, even if refrigerated for a long period of time, can start to develop mold. If you hold it up to the light, you might see a thin film of mold floating around. And I've had that happen with sugar water that we've made. So, you know, we usually make a new batch every week just because it's inexpensive and it's important that it be as healthy as possible for the birds to the extent that sugar water can be. So you're better off just making a new batch and getting it out there.
Okay. And Kathy, you had something else you wanted to say or ask, right?
I did. And I'll do that. I'll dump that. So my second one is last year around this time, I had some indigo bunting. And I had some red-breasted grosbeak, and I had, of course, my yellow finches, which I love. This year, and my Oreos, this year, I'm not seeing. I saw one yellow finch, and I have a bunch of blackbirds at my feeder. I put that white seed out there that's supposed to, like, deter them from coming around the feeders. But I'm not seeing any of my other birds. Well, what are those black ones that are coming around? Blackbirds and sparrows.
All right. Thanks, Kathy. What do you think, Greg?
So, Kathy, there are a variety of blackbirds that learn to frequent feeders, and it's hard to know without getting into a detailed description or a more detailed description what exactly they would be. It may be a function with you not seeing the other birds yet of timing. April was pretty cold from a migratory bird standpoint, and it really has slowed things down. And what we're seeing are a lot of birds that are just starting to arrive now, some right on time, others a little bit late. And so we saw our first indigo bunting here just a couple of days ago. And as I'd mentioned earlier, our first rose-breasted grosbeak just came in a couple of days ago. So I suspect if you still have your feeders out and the habitat in and adjacent to your yard hasn't changed substantially, you still stand a darn good chance of seeing all of those great birds that you saw last spring. And so fingers crossed that it's just a matter of time before they arrive in your yard.
And you may also be able to hear them. We actually have the sound of the indigo bunting here. Let's take a listen. There it is again. Craig, when we're looking for the indigo bunting, what characteristics are we trying to watch for?
Well, you're watching for a little bitty electric blue bird that sits on top of or on the side of a tree, typically on the forest edge, and sings his little heart out. It's a great song. It's very vigorous. And indigo buntings are one of the species that have a tendency to sing well into summer, sometimes even into late summer. So normally what happens is birdsong, much like migration, begins to crescendo, and then it peaks in June when the peak of breeding activity is underway. And then as birds finish having families, they start to quiet down. Indigo buntings and just a few other species, however, remain really vocal. And so that's one of the species that you can look for this midsummer that's still singing from the tops of trees. If you get it in good, bright light, it's going to be electric blue. If you see it in poor light, in dim light, it might look like just a little dark bird, but it's the song that will help give it away. And, you know, and Kathy had mentioned that she had them at her feeder. We have one at our feeder. And right now, with the vegetation not being fully leafed out, the trees are just starting to bud now. It's a great time to see these birds because you don't have to look through the vegetation in order to find them. They're much more visible.
We're talking about birds with Craig Thompson. He spent much of his career focused on migratory bird conservation. And we're also taking calls from you, including from Russ in Stoughton. Hi, Russ.
Hi. I'm about 15 miles southwest of Madison. And for since I moved here from Illinois, about the last 13, 14 years, I have hung up Baltimore Oriole feeders. And I use the pre-mixed red liquid you can get at stores and hardware stores. And I've had 10, 12 pairs sometimes, and I can count them in the trees and the bushes. Last year, I only had about 4. And this year, so far, I have had none. And the other comment I wanted to make is that about 4 or 5 years ago, I noticed that the little black and white woodpeckers are landing on the oriole feeders because it has bigger holes, and they're drinking out of there all the time. I wonder if anybody else sees that.
Thanks for that caller, Russ. We really appreciate it. What do you think, Craig?
Well, in regard, Russ, to the diminishment of orioles at your property, it's hard to know within a short period of time what exactly is going on. Again, if things are pretty stable in terms of the vegetation that you're finding in your area, it could just be that sometimes birds are more abundant in areas. Some years they're less so. And so we see those fluctuations within bird communities. From a much longer-term perspective, however, what we're seeing are declines of a lot of species for a number of reasons. And so we know that there are a third fewer orioles than there used to be. So there just aren't as many out there. And again, that's a conservation concern to the Department of Natural Resources and lots of other conservation organizations, and we're trying to get a handle on that. So it could be a reflection of just the fact that there are fewer orioles out there, or it could be that they just didn't show up this year yet at your place, and there just weren't as many the year before. So fingers crossed that as your yard vegetation continues to mature and you have feeders out there, you're going to continue to see orioles. Now, in regard to your comment about downies, birds are very clever little animals, and they keep an eye on what's going on out there. I actually have seen downy woodpeckers and, on occasion, some migrating warblers take a sip out of a hummingbird feeder, and it's a great little burst of energy for them. And so the downy that's clever enough to figure out how to drink nectar has really hit the jackpot from a dietary standpoint, at least until that hummingbird feeder is no longer out there. So once in a while you see those birds do that, and that's pretty neat. That indicates how adaptable they are to their environment.
Now, Russ from Monroe, Wisconsin, is ready to join our conversation. Welcome to the Ideas Network, Russ.
Thank you. Hi. We've been feeding birds continuously for about 5 years at our house, winter and summer, with circulating water during winter. And we've seen already goldfinches, downy woodpeckers, red-bellied sapsuckers, flickers. We saw a brown thrasher and a female grosbeak recently, and I think we have about 3-4 nesting robins, and I'm pretty sure this old female has been back for about the fourth year. At least it looks like the similar bird, and she looks a little older. But I was wondering about the brown thrashers. I've read that they're in decline also, and we only see them now and then.
All right. Thanks for the question, Russ. Craig, what do you know about the brown thrasher?
Yeah, Russ, it sounds like you've got a good handle on birds in your area, and you're right. Thrashers are in a rather steep decline. It's a lovely bird that's associated with forest edges and brushy old fields, and it's something that it's a species we're quite concerned about because they are, again, in rather steep decline for a variety of reasons. And so if you still have thrashers at your property, if your property supports a pair or even birds during migration, that's really important. And that's something that we want to know about. And so one of the things the way any citizen can or interested bird watcher can help with the conservation of these declining species in particular is to contribute your sightings to a Cornell Lab of Ornithology site called eBird, where you can go in and electronically enter all those birds that you're seeing and all that data that's coming in from birders throughout the nation and, in fact, across the world is really helping us to understand where birds are, how they're faring population-wise, and so on. So any records, Russ, that you're willing to contribute to eBird would be helpful for those species that you're finding on the property, including the brown thrasher.
Oh, how great. Craig Thompson, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure, Keely. I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you. Craig Thompson works for DNR's Natural Heritage Conservation Program. Much of his career has focused on migratory bird conservation. And you can stream the documentary titled Our Birds about Craig's work with birds this summer in Wisconsin and winter in Central America by going to the PBS Wisconsin site, which is pbswisconsin.org. And if you are seeing more birds in your area, head on over to the Ideas Network Facebook page to share with us what you're seeing in your backyard.